Welcome to the Sports Carnage Podcast, presented by Detroit Sports Nation, featuring Paul Roshan, D. Dylan Bear, and Ryan Griffin, delivering the most arrogant takes on the planet straight to your ears. We don't promise to always be right, but we promise to act like we are.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second edition of Sports Carnage. We are here, of course, joined with Paul Roshan and Daniel D. Bear. D. Daniel Bear, and I'm Ryan Griffin. We got a great show for you guys today. Lots to talk about. So much has went on in sports since the last time that we laid our podcast down. You got Jimmy Butler getting traded to the Philadelphia 76ers, really reshaping the kind of, you know, really the look of the Eastern Conference, at least in my opinion. We have, of course, college football rankings for you guys. Just a bunch of stuff.
Let's start with Jimmy Butler.
Just jump into Jimmy Butler.
This trade came out of, I think, nowhere. I mean, I didn't hear any Jimmy Butler to Philly rumblings. I thought the return was crazy different than expected. Then I went and read some trade grades, thought those were absolutely insane. I don't know what the heck I'm looking at. My initial reaction to the trade was, holy crap, Houston offered these guys 4 first-round picks spread out over the next, 7 years. So some of them would have probably been actually solid picks. And you're looking at what should be kind of a long-term thing in Minnesota. So for them to turn around and basically trade Butler for players when they are not or shouldn't be trying to win now just absolutely blew my mind. It hurts Philly's depth in the short term, but Philly is trying to win now. And over the next couple years, Philly plans to re-sign Jimmy Butler. They still got guys on rookie contracts. They got guys locked up for a little bit. They have financial flexibility. I think it was a great trade for Philly, even if the depth keeps them from really topping out this season. All right. Let's start with Dylan, because Dylan is our resident Sixers trust the process fan. So,
all right. So I trusted the process 3 glorious years ago under our Lord and Savior, Sam Hinkie. He sacrificed himself for our success. And what has become of it? We have the leading scorer in the NBA, one of the best point guards in the league, even without a jump shot. And now we were able to turn a bunch of crap into absolute gold. And I am super excited about this. I think that it is fantastic what the Sixers did. You argue depth, and while yes, I do understand the principle of what you are saying, what I am looking at is, number one, as you two both know, Robert Covington was not a good starter. He was not consistent enough from 3. Yes, he was a good defender, but plugging Jimmy Butler into that spot instead, and at some point, hopefully Brett Brown just puts Fultz at the 11 or 12 spot, puts him back into a suit, and lets J.J. Redick do what he does best, and then we play 4 out, 1 in. This could become such a dangerous team if they do that, if they transition to that. I love the trade. I think it's awesome. Saric is going to be missed, but I would prefer the 4 out, 1 in system anyway, because that's how Joel Embiid is going to flourish even more than he already has.
So as far as the trade goes, I really don't know where to start. I guess I'll start with the obvious, where it kind of puts the Sixers. I think it puts them on top of contention in the Eastern Conference. I think this move definitely makes them the favorite for the finals. For sure. As far as the trade dynamics go, one, it was a terrific trade for Philadelphia, of course. I thought it was shocking that they didn't have to give up Markelle Fultz, who obviously is much aligned.
I wouldn't care.
As much aligned shooting form.
His shot is so bad.
Right. So as you can see, it's already turned some Sixers fans off from him completely, but he's still really young. I think he's, a 19, 20-year-old kid. Number one draft pick. He still has tons of room to grow. So I'm shocked that Minnesota couldn't get him, out of the deal as potentially, even potentially a future star. Obviously, you wouldn't see it right now. But, he's shown flashes of being able to do things in the NBA, just not shoot, which, right now is probably the most important thing. As far as Minnesota goes, I think this really shows how much faith they have in Tibbs. I don't know why they have that faith in Tom Thibodeau. But you mentioned some of the contracts, or I'm sorry, some of the trades that they denied. One most notably, even more than the four first rounds spread over the 8 years from, you know, a team that's probably going to be pretty good for, you know, the next four or five, even six of those years, is the one that they turned down from Miami, where they were getting Josh Richardson and a first round pick back. Yeah. So in this trade, they did not get a player as good as Josh Richardson, and they also did not get a first-round pick. They added a second-round pick, which is remarkable to me. But why Minnesota made the move, I think it's pretty simple. They are still in win-now mode, and they really have to be because they have two max guys. They've already maxed out Andrew Wiggins, and they've already maxed out Karl-Anthony Towns. So they got two pretty solid role players. I know you aren't big on Covington. I am.
I hate him.
He's still, you know, definitely a plus on the defensive end, and he shoots 39% from, you know, three this year. Of course, you'd like to have to hover above around 40, but definitely for a team like Minnesota, which doesn't have shooters anyway, you know, that's something that's going to obviously benefit them. And then Sarge, the same type of thing. So those are two really immediate starters that they can plug in and battle for one of those final playoff spots in the Western Conference. But Minnesota wasn't. Minnesota wasn't going to go full tank, not with obviously two max guys. But yeah, I mean, great trade for the Sixers. You know, I don't think Butler really helps with their shooting woes, which has kind of been, you know, their downfall. Because Jimmy Butler, of course, isn't a lights out shooter. But, you know, hopefully this gives room for Redick to bump himself back up into the starting lineup. They're really going to need him. You know, and then, you know, Ben Simmons has more to work around. Of course, Embiid has more. Because he's a terrific passer, too. He has more to help him out with and take some of the pressure off of him. But, yeah, I think this move puts Philly, you know, really the favorite for the finals in the East.
My thing is, for Minnesota, you talked about they have two max guys. Those are two young max guys that have a lot of basketball left and a lot of years on those max
contracts.
But
little
left.
In terms of showing development, which is the big concern.
Which is totally Minnesota's fault. Because
Cat
was developing with Garnett there, and then Garnett retired, and Minnesota hasn't been
part of my point.
Really
How
able to develop anybody.
How can you possibly be in win-now mode when your two max guys aren't yet playing like max guys?
Cat plays like a max guy.
Talent to win now.
But, I mean, Cat has playing like a max guy lately. I know he started off the season real rough.
See, he's had a small stretch where he's been, like, living up to that, but I haven't seen it over a long period of time. And I, like you said, with the development, like, they're just not there yet. So why on earth you're trying to win now? And I actually liked – I know everyone –
because they made the playoffs last
big
year.
On Houston. Houston is already showing cracks. Now, do I think that they are a 500 team? Of course not. But they have already shown some of the issues that they have with that team. Chris Paul is not getting any younger. James Harden – I think a lot older than some people realize. It's not like the dude's 24 years old anymore. This is a team. They got Clint Capella. What do you have in the next few years when Chris Paul's done and they didn't get to the mountaintop and then you're trading or you're stuck with a sketch James Harden on that contract? They're not going to be that good for that long. Their window is going to close, and it's going to close fast. And I think eventually they're going to completely tear down. And I think the second half of those 8 years, they will be easily a bottom 10 team. I think within a couple years, it's going to be over in Houston. Like, they're going to make a run and have their shot, and that's it. Like, I think the four picks was awesome because I think that's the long-term play that Minnesota needed to take, and they didn't do it. You talked about the deal they had from Miami. I don't see where that gets them where they really truly want to be. It gets Miami their superstar, and I have way more faith that Pat Riley knows what he's doing than I do in Minnesota's front office. So if Pat Riley was willing to give up that, I take a long, hard look at that and be like, I don't think that's a great deal for Minnesota. They were in a bad spot. I mean, let's be real. You have a superstar that absolutely hates playing for you. It does not want to play for your team and has been extremely vocal about it. Despite that, they got plenty of solid offers to choose from, and I think this was the worst of them. You talked about it, Ryan. You think that actually makes them the favorites in the Eastern Conference. I don't.
Yep.
I still think Boston's better than them.
Well, wait. Why? Because, to be fair, everyone would argue that Philadelphia's biggest problem is that on offense, because Simmons and Fultz can't shoot, that their offense is pretty predictable in what it is. There isn't any outside threat. Imagine, Embiid already has been balling out on the offensive end. Imagine now that he is somebody who actually plays well on ball.
When you don't have 10 superstars or an entire team that shoots 42% from three, I think depth is incredibly important. And Boston plays a brand of defense that I really like. And when you have a team that can't shoot the ball, that's really, really bad, especially when you have good on-ball defenders like Boston does. I think Boston's the best team in the East, and I think Toronto is better than Philly right now. Yeah. I will take
Toronto,
I will take
absolutely
both of those
not.
Teams.
Boston,
and I want to see Philly in their
I like Toronto a lot.
Make a run.
Like,
I think
Kawhi's crazy
and
Kyle Lowry playing out
and
of
Philly
his mind
runs
right now.
The league like it's nobody's business because it was a different league. You can't win in today's NBA shooting the way Philly shoots. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how good Embiid is. I don't care how much of a visionary in reincarnate.
And also, to be fair, y'all are also forgetting something. You talk about the bench, but Philly did have, honestly, their only big offseason move. He's barely played. He's just now starting to get minutes, but Wilson Chandler has not been playing the season so far, and they are going to get him later on in the year, so there is going to be some depth on this team.
Wilson Chandler is like the Sean Marion signing for the Cavs a couple years ago. Everyone's going crazy over it. It didn't do anything.
I don't care if Simmons is the reincarnate of Magic Johnson. The dude can't shoot, and he's extremely one-dimensional right now. I like a lot of his game. I like his passing ability. I like his defense, but he still can't shoot. We talked about Markelle Fultz. Another great point. You said you don't know why Minnesota would take that deal without getting Markelle Fultz. If I'm Philly, I would have rather given up Markelle Fultz than what I gave up, because those guys you gave up were the only players on your team that could really shoot the ball outside of J.J. Redick.
No,
I would
more
have rather
there, just him.
Okay, little bit of hyperbole.
They need to,
but you understand
they
what
need
I'm
to
saying.
Go get quarterback.
I would have rather Fultz. They're trying to win now,
yeah,
and Fultz brings nothing to that end. Nothing. So I would have rather given up Fultz than the players that I gave up, who you kind of need this year. I think it's a good trade for Philly. I'm not gonna. It's a much better trade for Philly than it is for Minnesota. But I do not think this makes them the favorites in the East. I want to know real quick in 1 minute, what do you think this means for this year, Dylan?
For this year? So, okay, what I think this means for this year is that they will be able to contend with a Toronto team that won't be the same as they are next year. Toronto is going to win because there's a meshing period this team needs. And you are correct, they need more shooting depth. But I think they'll be a serious contender, but I think that this is better as a long-term move with Butler signing, because you will be able to keep a really solid core and you will be able to work with the younger kids. I also wish Fultz was gone, but at least this now puts less pressure on him to develop so quickly. So I think it's a better long-term move. This year, they'll be much more fun to watch, but I care more about 2-3 years down the road.
I mean, really quick to that point, though, Jimmy Butler's contract is only through this year, so they're going to have to resign.
But they have already discussed and are almost at an agreement that when the season
is over,
they're resigning him. They already
have
pretty much certified this.
Resigning him.
Yeah, that's not
Jimmy Butler still has to want to play there as opposed to anywhere else.
It would take a monumental fail or falling out in Philly this year for Jimmy Butler not to re-sign there. Philly did not make this trade without a 99% guarantee that he's re-signing there. It wouldn't make any sense for them
to
make it.
Yes, it would, because then they'd get their title. They would make their team better immediately.
There's no way they were going to get a title with him this year.
There's no chance you're getting a title this year. This is
there is a chance.
You're hoping to lock up your core for the future, shooters, and then make a run.
If Golden State has a devastating injury, and obviously it's a big if, to me this is going to make Philadelphia by year's end the second best team in the NBA. Because I don't believe in the Celtics. Jason Tatum is overrated. Jalen Brown is overrated. And Al Horford has fallen off a cliff this year.
Boston isn't the threat. It's the team with the second best player in the league in the same conference. Toronto
is
legit.
Not even close to true.
There are four Western Conference teams alone I would take over Philly, and two Eastern Conference
Absolutely
teams
not.
I would take over Philly.
I would take Toronto over this team in a heartbeat.
I would take Toronto. I would take Boston.
Not by year's end, because Toronto has that same meshing period.
I would take Denver. I would take the Denver Nuggets over Philly this year.
Absolutely not. You're insane.
Why?
Right. I mean, why? The Nuggets have one superstar player. Murray is nice. I love Gary Harris.
You know what the Nuggets have? Depth. A team that plays together.
If Jamal Murray is able to grow as a point guard, they are going to be dangerous as hell, dude.
No matter how much he grows, he's not going to grow to be Ben Simmons.
I bet he shoots a lot better than Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I would argue he's a better point guard for them than Simmons is. For a worse team, he's a better point guard.
For a worse team, he's a better point guard. And you also have to take into account the conversation.
I'll take Denver all day. I would kill if I could see a Denver Philly final. Give me that.
That'd be the grossest thing I've ever seen.
All right, we're moving on. Now we're talking about long term things and things whether they're going to pay off.
The Nuggets as the best team in the NBA and all types of other ridiculous.
Oh my God! Nobody said that.
No, Jamal Murray, better point guard than Chris Paul.
You're the only person that thinks Philly is a top two team in the NBA right now.
Hold on. I said at year's end. I didn't say
this
right
year,
now.
This
Why
season,
do you keep making that caveat like somehow
any
that
point
matters?
This season.
How
yeah,
doesn't it not matter?
About this season?
Because there's a meshing period.
I do understand Ryan doesn't want to say that this week they're beating anybody because Jimmy Butler has to integrate into the team. But by year's end, they're not all of a sudden going to spawn four depth shooters. Like it's
That's
not
what
happening.
I'm saying. That's exactly. Paul and I are in agreement on that. Like they're really good. They're going to be so much better when he re-signs. That's why this matters. This is not a
They're
play
going to
for
be
this
so
year.
Much better also immediately this year. This gives
but
them
there
a real shot
four
at the
of
finals.
Him. They got rid of two shooters and then got one for a reason.
They got rid of two role players. Congratulations.
Two starters. What are you talking about? They weren't role players.
Really
they were role players.
They were starters. Saric averaged 33 minutes a game. What are you talking about?
You can be a role player and average 33 minutes a game.
No.
You think every starter in the NBA is a role player?
I can't do
You're
this.
Right. You're right. I don't know my team. You're right. My bad.
Apparently not.
Ryan is just in love with Philly. I mean, I think Ryan is a bigger Philly fan than Dylan is.
They have so much more talent than anybody else in the East, and it's going to prove itself at year's end.
You really don't seem to understand how much of an issue Fultz's development is slowing down this team. Fultz is wasting this team's talent.
So instead of Fultz as your third option, now you have Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, so Fultz needs to go right on the back of the freaking bench, but they won't
but that's
because Brett Brown is too freaking... Oh, my God.
Third option? How is Jimmy Butler anything other than the first option?
Embiid will always be first. Sure, he's
Embiid will always be first.
He's just going to have the ball in his hands
shooting.
The third
I'm talking shooting.
Time.
I mean, Joel Embiid is like the guy they will funnel to. They will always put him in. They'll usually have either high screen or they'll flash him to the elbow. They'll dump it off to him, and then they let either Redick or Butler, they're going to have them running through screens like a madman. But this really slowed the roll. But anyways, I appreciate the Philly topic, though. This is cool as hell.
Cool for – I don't even know. It went somewhere I did not expect it to go. Philly's the second best team in the NBA. Come on,
yeah,
get
that
out of here. Let's go.
That is.
All right, now
I didn't say
what
right
we've been
now.
Trying
you guys,
to talk
you guys
about.
Listen.
If
your
things,
caveat makes no sense.
How does it not make any
at the
sense?
End of the year? They're going to be the best team, fellas.
So a team can't get better when they just add an all-star player.
But no,
by the end of the year,
God,
they can't get any better.
You're missing our point.
No, you're missing my point. You think I said they're the second best team in the NBA right now?
No, I don't. I don't care about now or March 30th or April 45th. That's not our point.
Those days don't exist.
Ryan is so wrapped up in his take, he can't even get past the semantics.
No, that's because you guys don't understand what I'm saying.
Philly is the second best team in the NBA at the end of this NBA season.
Yes, when they are in the NBA Finals against the Golden State Warriors, there's going to be no doubt that those are the two best teams in the league.
All right. And when that doesn't happen, you can get on here and get on your knees. Moving on.
Oh, God.
Talking about things that might have panned out, didn't pan out, what's happening this year, what's happening down the road, Le'Veon Bell did not report to the Steelers this week. He is not playing football in the 2018 season. He gave away $14.5 million. Everybody knows this. It's only been talked about for six freaking months.
Yep.
It's insanity. It's absolute insanity. But I will sit back and listen to you guys before I tell you how much of an idiot he is.
I mean, he's not an idiot at all for doing what he wanted to do. The $14.5 million this year is probably not hurting him, and he wasn't going to take the chance of getting an injury where he wouldn't get another multi-year contract. So even if his next contract, a team only signs him for, say, 12, 13, whatever it is, if he's got 3 or 4 years on that deal, I mean, that's really what he was looking for in the first place. Of course, he wanted to be paid more so he could kick out more to his agent and so he could get more money himself. But it was more about him wanting that guaranteed, you know, sort of longevity of him getting paid as opposed to him having one really big payday. And then, God forbid, you know, something happened that happens in football where he's not able to play any longer and then he only got that one payday instead of 2, 3, 4, however long the next contract he signs is.
Yeah, I mean,
ladies and gentlemen, forgot to let you know that we did bring Le'Veon Bell's agent on the show today.
Oh, God. Like, stop right, trolling. Shit. Like,
I'll take 10%.
Look, the point is, okay. So, to be fair, one big thing with you is that you hate player agency. It's why you hate the NBA. Paul, that is.
It's not true at all. It's not even remotely true. I love when players get what they're worth.
Well, to be fair, he will. And he shot a shot. And here's what I think, personally, what I think went down. He held out thinking that the Steelers were going to bite. They didn't. And they got a local kid instead, who, by the way, is honestly almost the same as far as football is concerned here. And to be fair, right now the Steelers are second in the AFC. I don't see what benefit there would have been with him coming back after he already shot a shot. What is the point in coming back to a team that no longer needs you? I don't really get it. Like, what other option was he going to have?
I mean, the obvious that's really all I'm paid.
But to be fair, number one, he didn't want to be there, right? But the biggest thing was he wanted to be paid. But the minute that the Steelers said, all right, well, we'll take you up on your bet and we'll just replace you, at that point, Paul, what is it that you wanted him to do after that?
So
at that
I
point?
Want him to not be a brain-dead idiot. Le'Veon Bell is getting bad advice and is apparently not a very smart person. I have no problem with holdouts. I have no problem with anything all these players do to try to get paid, as long as there's a logical aspect to it, as long as it makes sense. So you held out, all right? You're like, I want a long-term contract. I'm worth X amount of dollars, whatever. I'm not just a running back. I'm a receiver, and I do this, and I do that. Well, first of all, you way, way overrate your own skills, because I don't know if y'all have checked any regular stats, any advanced stats, any anything. But Le'Veon Bell, actually not a very good receiver. Actually like bottom 15 in the NFL among receiving backs. Not good stats at all. Not that good of a receiver. Is he capable of catching passes and making some nice plays? Of course he is. He is a complete back. But he is certainly no James White as a receiving back.
But what does that matter with this?
Well, it matters because that's what Le'Veon Bell's basing his extra value on. That he's
I would no, I don't think
back.
That's
no,
what
no.
it is.
He's come out and said it 10 times. I don't care what you think. I care what Le'Veon Bell has come out and said very specifically.
Yeah, his thing was always the amount of touches
like
he's getting every year.
And
that's
like
what, no,
players.
That's what I thought it was. It was more of the wear and tear that the Steelers put on it.
No, he wanted to be viewed in a different light. It had nothing to do with usage.
But part of those
no,
touches,
it was all
yes,
about,
it did, because he said that too, but part
hold
of those
on.
Touches
There's
were him
There's a lot
catching
more
passes.
To this. So Le'Veon Bell's big thing, right? He wants security. He wants the big long-term contract. He wanted that, right?
Which makes a lot
Le'Veon
of sense
Bell,
as a running
can
back.
Can you let me finish? I have 2 Le'Veon Bell agents on the show. This is amazing. Incredible.
I don't give a crap, to be honest.
So Le'Veon Bell, the only point of holding out this year, is to get a contract, a long-term contract, a nice lucrative contract from the Steelers. Because guess what? Nobody else can give it to you because you're on the franchise tag. The only team that can give you what you want this year is the Steelers. Okay, so you got $14.5 million on the table. The Steelers offered you much more than you were worth. The Steelers actually offered a very good contract They offered a contract that was like $16 million a year, which is insane. I wouldn't give Le'Veon Bell more than $9 million a year. It's ludicrous. He's a running back. I mean, look at what your rookie did. Now, I know that's hindsight. That's 100% hindsight. No one knew that Connor Cook was going to come in and do what he did. But you have seen James Connor. Nobody knew that James Connor was going to come in and do what he did. But there are 100 instances all over in the NFL, not just running backs, players at all positions, but especially running back, that it's not the player. That there are so many things more important than the offensive line, the quarterback, the coaching staff, the offensive system. And you're going to try to get more than $16 million. And you're going to pass up $14.5 million. And don't give me this injury garbage. If you're worried about injury, you're not out playing basketball and riding around in the ocean in Miami when you're not in the physical shape that you geared up for a football season. I don't care how much you work out. I don't care how much time you put in the offseason. You are not in the shape to be. I mean, you could easily blow an Achilles out and never play again playing ball. Are you telling me you can't? How? That's just ludicrous. You're going to talk about, oh, I could get hurt during the football season. That's insanity to me. Look at Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant sat on his ass for a couple months. His first practice back with the Saints blows an Achilles. Why?
Hold on. Dez Bryant is also like 7 years older than him. Stop.
Dez Bryant's not that old.
Yes, he is.
Dez Bryant's 30 years old.
Yes, how old do you think Le'Veon Bell is?
How old do you think Le'Veon Bell is? He's 27.
That's a big difference.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge difference. So I'm going to lose, and he's so worried about injury, I'm going to lose a year in my prime and pass up $14.5 million that he will not recruit. And I'll bet you whatever you want that he will never, ever recoup that money because he's not going to get the contract.
He's 26, all right? That's
no
a four-year difference.
Running back. No, how old's Dez Bryant, 29 or 30?
30.
Look it up since you looked up Le'Veon.
I just
look it
did.
Up real quick. All right, 30? 30 years old.
He's 30 years
so
old.
So a 30-year-old man, we're 90 now? It's a huge difference. I'm my 30-year-old Achilles. I'm like a 90-year-old man. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Oh my god. Okay. You know what? You know what?
How
I'm tired.
Is Le'Veon Bell
oh
gonna
my
get
god.
That $14.5 million?
Hold on.
Check? How?
You answer my question because you didn't. If you were him and you shot your shot and it failed and you're sitting there seeing James Conner do your job better than you and you've already staked your line in the sand, what else did you want him to do?
You come back before it's too late. See, here's the
no,
thing.
No, it was already too late the minute that he started in week one and had two touchdowns.
All wrong from the beginning. See, he made himself look selfish. He could have made himself out to be a martyr.
Yeah, his
he
players talking
about
his contract
about
also didn't help.
He could have made it about players' rights. He could have been open with his team and his teammates.
So lying.
No,
you wanted him to lie instead.
About himself. Yes! Sometimes lying is smart. Being a selfish prick doesn't pay. So what is his goal? This is what I talked about, right? I'm fine with players holding out if they have a logical goal in mind. So you don't want him to lie. You want him to be this goody two-shoes, right? So how is he going to get to his goal?
I don't care.
How is he going to get to his goal of getting... His goal is money, right? He wants financial security. He wants more money than the Steelers were offering him.
And
how
he's going to get it.
How making himself out to be selfish and ignorant and passing up $14.5 million and missing a year of football, how does any of those things help him do his goal?
No team is going
to give him the money that he wants. No team in the NFL. Not one team will give him the money that he's looking for, and I will be shocked if he gets a better contract offer than he got from the Steelers.
I guarantee you that will happen. And also,
from
you are putting way too much emphasis on this year missed. If that were really the case, then Marshawn Lynch wouldn't have gotten what he got from the Oakland Raiders, but he did. So chill.
What did Marshawn Lynch get from the Oakland Raiders? Marshawn Lynch isn't breaking any contract records. Do you understand what Le'Veon Bell
is asking to do? I'm looking up his contract right now.
It's a terrible comparison.
Oh, dude, that's okay, perfect. He's making how much, Ryan, how much is it? Yeah, he signed a two-year, $9 million contract with Oakland, and he is 32, 33?
That's something nothing. Like that? That's
31
nothing.
Years old. He
it's
signed this contract.
No.
He signed a $9 million contract with Oakland after sitting out
at the age of 31, and you think that Le'Veon Bell at 27 years old is not going to get more?
You're not even comparing apples to oranges. You're comparing apples to cats. It's a 2-year deal for chump change. Nobody, you're talking about Le'Veon Bell wants a 4-5-6-year deal for like $100 million, dude. I mean, this guy isn't asking for a throwaway deal. You're talking about, yeah, Oakland signed a dude when they thought they might be contending for 2 years. 2 years and $4.5 million. Do you know what $4.5 million is to an NFL team? It's nothing.
What are you saying? Nevin Lawson got it. It was $9 million per year.
One of the worst quarters, one of the worst cornerbacks in the NFL got $10 million. Are you kidding me? Right? Over 2 years. You're talking about a chump change deal from a 33-year-old running back. I don't care. It doesn't. That is literally so far away. If you want to make a comparison, make it Todd Gurley. At least somebody that's in the realm of Le'Veon Bell and just got a big money deal. I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's insanity.
All right.
Absolutely,
I'm over this.
And we will come back
gonna...
to this when Le'Veon Bell doesn't sign a contract that eclipses what the Steelers made next year. How is he ever going to make up $14.5 million? He's not going to make it on the back end of his career, and he just missed a year.
If Brock Osweiler is able to get a contract like that, there is a desperate-ass team.
Brock Osweiler is a quarterback, which teams are always desperate for.
And if,
nobody
even if
needs
it's
a
not
running
14
back.
And a half
you can get
per
one
year,
in the fourth
if you
round,
get 13
like
and a half
clockwork.
Or 14 4 years.
Yeah.
That's what he wants more
look,
than
if
the 1 year.
Look, if he gets his long-term deal, he's won and your point is invalid. And I just I don't care because you're just mad because he wants shot a shot. You're mad that he stuck up for himself.
See, and that's just it's ignorant of you to say that. Why would I be mad? I love when players do that.
You clearly sure sounds like
a real logical goal.
His logical goal is to get paid long-term.
He didn't.
Yeah, I don't get what your problem is with what. I just don't understand what else, what alternate options you think he feasibly with what he wanted, what he was going
to
do.
His best option was to sign the tender immediately. When that didn't happen, and the team was clear that they were going to move on without him, in the first 2 weeks of the season, Connor Cook comes in and essentially takes your job. You go back to that team immediately.
Connor.
Immediately. No, I love it because it pisses you off. I'm going to say Connor Cook the entire time. And you know why I'm going to say it? Because he's another irrelevant, replaceable player. You came in and you want to break every single contract record in the history of your position, and you are replaced by a rookie who was not even hyped up when he was picked. It's not like it was a top 10 pick that people thought was going to set the world on fire. And he replaced you with better production.
Neither was Antonio Brown. He went in the sixth round. That doesn't mean that he's. Oh my God. Dude,
what are you talking
your arguments
about?
Are stupid. Oh my God, there was no fanfare when James Conner was picked in the third round. Well, neither was Tom Brady or Antonio Brown. Like, that's not a good argument. James Conner has come in and I would argue made
the
Steelers
most
better.
Irrelevant possible things that there are that have nothing to do with what we're talking about in the slightest.
Oh my God, why are you caring about draft position? That's so
Ryan
dumb.
Ryan asked.
You of all
Ryan
people should know.
Ryan asked.
Well, that's
no, your
that's
point
you
is
brought it up
that
first.
Ryan
is that
yeah,
even
you no, asked. You're sitting there saying, "Oh my God, there was no fanfare for James Conner." Well, okay, but there hasn't been for a ton
of NFL
legends.
You are latching on to something that I wasn't even talking about.
You literally
simple.
Said it. You said that there was no hype for James Conner, and it's on Le'Veon Bell because, oh, well, he got replaced by a guy who nobody was excited about the Steelers drafting, which is stupid.
My point was he was an idiot for putting himself in this position when he's trying to break every single contract record that his position's ever seen, and you are replaceable by a mid-round pick.
Which has clearly not been. Stop bringing up the pick part. James Conner is very good. Stop.
What?
Oh my God.
The pick is okay, I don't understand what you don't comprehend about this. Picks are valuable things to NFL teams, correct? NFL teams highly value
draft
NFL draft
position
picks,
is not something that you are going to knock a guy for when he clearly has proven the opposite.
Stop acting like I'm knocking James Conner. Stop being so dense. I don't understand what you can't get through your vegan skull. It's not that difficult. It's really not a difficult concept. You are replaceable by a mid-round pick. There
stop bringing up the mid-round pick like
no,
it matters.
No, it is important. It does matter.
It's not.
Because it's not a premium
good.
Thing. It doesn't. You're missing the complete point. How on earth are you worth $16+ million a year if you are replaceable by a mid-round pick? If a team can go and take a third-round pick,
Ryan,
and
Ryan,
use a third-round pick,
help him understand because he keeps bringing up the mid-round pick bullshit. I'm tired of this crap.
You don't understand the point. I don't understand what is so dang hard about it for you. How are you worth $18 million a year if I can take something that 32 NFL teams have five of every single year and just go replace your ass for a tenth of the money? How are you worth what you're asking for? How? How when I can take something that every NFL team has, a third, a fourth, a second round pick, and use it and pay you $500,000 a year, how on earth are you in any realm worth $17-18 million a year? You're not. It has nothing to do with the player that you take in the mid-round. You are, the history of the NFL has shown that you are replaceable by a mid-round pick, something every NFL team has. And to make a fraction of what you're asking for, you are absolutely not worth what you're asking for, and you are an idiot for holding out. There is, you brought up Tom Brady earlier. There is no history. There is no track record of history of six-round quarterbacks panning out. There is a huge history in the NFL of mid-round running backs panning out exceptionally well. You are not
not at this level. If
you, yes, at this level.
You're telling
just
me that
recently,
everybody. You're telling
some of the
me.
Best
oh my
rookie
God.
Running back classes in history recently. What do you
what?
Mean not at this level?
Say it again.
We've had some of the best rookie running back classes in history in the past 3 years. I mean, it's right there. How can you possibly, with all the success these teams are having, bringing in guys like Hunt and Kamara out of nowhere and having them star on their teams, how can you possibly have the gall to think it's smart to ask for $18+ million a year and not think that you're replaceable? It's insanity, and that's my problem with this. I have no problem with him trying to get every money, every penny that he possibly can out of his NFL career. No problem with that at all. If a GM is dumb enough to give it to you, take it. Set up your family for generations. That's awesome. Just don't be an idiot. And Le'Veon Bell is an idiot because he was replaceable. And everybody knew that he was replaceable except him and his idiot agent. And now he's sitting there without a job, without $14.5 million, praying that he can sucker a GM into giving him maybe close to what the Steelers had already offered him. That makes him an idiot.
He's probably at the homeless shelter right now. Jobless, homeless, collecting unemployment. Speaking of strong takes, clearly we have some pretty opinionated gentlemen on the show. So our next segment is actually a new segment that we brought to the show. Very exciting. Here is Daniel Bear to go ahead and roll out his Grizzly takes.
Yeah, so we got ourselves a real good, unique segment here of my own concoction. So, as the last name would preclude, this is the Grizzly Takes. And what we are going to be doing is I'm going to be throwing out some opinions that I 100% agree with. These are things that I believe, and these gentlemen are going to tell me whether my takes are grizzly, that they are strong, that they are fierce, or that if they're cuddly, nice and kind, and not worth anybody's time. Not when we're talking about the gridiron, which is what we're going to be doing today. So, for these takes, gentlemen, I have broken it up as five takes each from four different topics. I got college football in general. I got, Paul, this will help you out a lot, Michigan-specific takes, because Michigan State sucks, and I hate them right now.
Too far. Rude.
I got the NFL, and then I have this one I like a lot. It's the NFC North takes, so not specific to my Bears that clown your Lions, or the Lions themselves, because they suck, but I got four categories. So here we go. We're going to start off in college football. And my first take, and I want to hear from y'all about this, is UCF, who College Game Day is going to this week for God knows why, because they're going to get so much hate for it. But UCF must join the ACC within the next 3 years if they're serious about football.
Yeah, that's a grizzly take. I mean, it'll obviously help them if they keep winning at this rate to not get shut out from the playoff and not get, really shut out from any national conversation.
I mean, I don't think it's that simple. I don't know if the ACC is going to be like, hey, get on up in here. If they're serious about it and they actually think that they're good enough to be in the college football playoff one day, yeah, 100% they need to join the ACC. I think deep down they know that they're not. They're going to take advantage of this run. They're going to claim their fake national titles, and that's going to be that. In a couple years, no one will remember.
Grizzly or Cudley, sir? Play the game.
Grizzly. Grizzly.
All right. All right. The Power Five will become Division One, and the Group of Five will be Division Two. We will have 5 16-team conferences as Division One now, and everybody else is going to be Division Two.
Is there a time frame for it?
No, just that it's an inevitable. It's going to happen.
Then Grizzly. Yeah, well, you said it's inevitable.
Nah, it's Cuddly, man. There's going to be the five power big conferences of 16. It might even be like four of 16. I don't know if there's – I mean, you've got 64 Power 5 teams right now, and I think the Big 12 really will dissolve someday. But, no, you are going to have those big conferences, and there is going to be some sort of split. But – the Group of Five is not going to be relegated to Division Two. There is too large of a gap, and then that would create too many teams there. It's still going to be Division One. It's just going to be different.
All right. This is one that we brought up in our infamous Facebook chat that I know, Paul, you and I had issues with our elder senior Don Drysdale of DSN fame. The Rose Bowl has not been reduced in importance by the College Football Playoff.
That is cuddly because every single bowl game that's not part of the College Football Playoff that given year has been reduced by the importance because you know there's something greater that everybody else is playing for, at least the quote-unquote good teams are playing for.
That's grizzly as hell. I don't know what Ryan is on. He's been hanging out with Don too much. The Rose Bowl's never been a championship game, and the Rose Bowl is in the rotation
for
the College Football Playoff.
Yep.
But the Rose Bowl's never been a de facto championship game. There are many years that it was a big part of the playoff or the championship picture. Well, I mean, look back to Michigan's last national title in 97 that they split. They didn't play Nebraska in the Rose Bowl for the title. They played, claimed a title. Nebraska won their game, claimed a title. The Rose Bowl's always been what it is. Whether it was BCS era, whether it was 80 years ago, it's always been the best team in the Big Ten not playing for the title. It's always been like that.
2006, so, baby.
And it hasn't changed at all, except on the years that it's in the rotation, it actually has heightened meaning. But the Rose Bowl's literally always been the highest-ranked Big Ten team that's not participating in the title. So how you could say that it not being part of the title somehow diminishes it, it doesn't make any sense if you know anything about the history of the Rose Bowl. Grizzly.
Speaking of diminishing returns, Uncle Urban will be out as OSU's head coach at the end of this season, and Bob Stoops will take over.
Cuddly, Urban's not going anywhere yet. Even if they finish with, you know, 10 wins, he's going to get 2-3 more years to try and build that program back up to national title contention.
I'm going to say Cuddly. I understand where you're going with this. Just too many variables for me to get on board with. From Bob Stoops alone taking over, yeah, it's a possibility. Sure it is. But if Urban goes, I mean, there's a lot of coaches that would like to coach in OSU, and it would be a big deal. And Urban, if he doesn't want to be done, isn't going to be done. Certainly the writing looks on the wall like he doesn't have a lot more years left. But for me to say that he is definitely stepping down after this year and then a guy like Bob Stoops is going to take over, too much going on there. I see where you're going with it, but cuddly.
All right, and then the last one for college football, and this is the one that I leave the last one is my strongest. Lincoln Riley will be the next college to NFL leaper. He will go from college to the NFL as a head coach.
100% Grizzly.
Definitely Grizzly. He will be gone within 2 years.
All right, and now we are moving on to the big, the bad, and the blue, the Michigan Wolverines. And this will be interesting to see just how Lil Bro Paul's attitude's going to be. We'll see. So the first one is Michigan's defense is on par but not better than the MSU defense of 2013.
I'll say that's a grizzly take, but that's my favorite defense ever. So probably a lot of bias there.
I think it's cuddly. The 2013 defense was incredible. I would have loved to see the playoff back then. I think they could have hung with Auburn. I think they could have hung but not beaten FSU. And Alabama would have probably made the playoff that year too, and I think pretty much everyone else would have been sitting home. I think it would have been Auburn, Alabama, FSU, and then Michigan State. I think you would have won your first round game and probably played FSU in the championship and then lost. Great defense. Not going to take anything away from that team. But back then, looking at the rosters, even Darqueze Dennard, who I think was just fabulous player in college, not the fastest guy. And I'm not knocking him. He ran like, I want to say, a 4.5, 4.40, right? What strikes me about this Michigan defense is how fast they are at every single position on defense. They're technically sound. They're very good players, but they are so fast. One thing that everyone knocked the Big Ten for a long time is not being able to keep up with SEC speed. This defense is one of the fastest I've seen in college football. I think they are a touch better than that 2013 team. Great, great defenses both.
Okay. This one's going to be interesting for you, Paul. This Michigan team still is not as good in totality as the 2006 team.
I'll take that, Grizzly. That 2006 team, their offense was insane.
That offense was the most prolific I have ever seen.
But that offense was just crazy. And I know Michigan's offense, of course, doesn't put up bad numbers, but I think just across the board, you look at, even especially like the skill positions, I even think the offensive line, while they've showed better this year, I think in 2006, they were really better on that side of the ball, and they still had a really good defense. So it wasn't as much of a tipping point as to this year's D.
Okay, you said 2006, not 2016?
No,
correct. 2006. Mike Hart, Chad Henne, them boys.
Yeah.
Mario Manningham.
I think it's cuddly, and it pains me to say this so much, because that 2006 team was the height of my childhood. I think the Big Ten was really exposed that year.
And they're not this year?
Into the height? No, on a different way. So we were getting to the height of SEC dominance back then. And we watched
that hadn't started what happened. Yet.
Yeah, we were getting basically to the start of it.
No. What happened with Florida and OSU, right? So OSU was embarrassed in that game. And I'm not going to say I think Michigan was a better team than OSU, but I don't think that game would have ended a lot differently if Michigan played them. Wow. And Michigan, if you remember, who did Michigan play that year? Michigan played USC, correct?
Yes, but as you and I have both said, there was no way they were going to win that game. That was an emotional game.
And they got beat up by USC. Now, that 2016 was incredible, but it's the same thing that we talked about. And that was really when the Big Ten was starting to get exposed on the national level. Michigan looked so good all year against teams that didn't have a ton of speed, that weren't from the SEC, that weren't from some of them PAC powerhouses back then, like USC. They were exposed. I think Ohio State was exposed. I think Michigan was exposed. I think the Big Ten as a whole. And it hurts me to say this. You know how much it hurts me to say this. I really think that the college landscape has changed a ton. And I think this year's Michigan team would beat up 2006 by 10 points.
So cuddly for you. All right. Cuddly. Third one. Michigan fans literally cannot worry about missing the CFP, especially after seeing Ohio State this week. I wrote this last week. Dude, it's happening. Just relax. You are going to the college football playoff.
Super cuddly. I mean, Ohio State. Oh, Michigan State dominated themselves, but it's on the road in Columbus against a team that you never ever beat. So I don't know. I don't think any Michigan fan should be, buying their ticket to the CFP wherever that game's played right now.
It's crazy cuddly, and you're gonna say, little bro, do not take this wrong. Michigan has a 90% chance of going to the playoff.
You have the easiest route left. You have the easiest route left.
That's not true at all.
No, No.
Clemson does. Clemson does.
Away, and so does Clemson. We don't even have.
No. Notre Dame.
The third easiest left. Like, it's not even close. Notre Dame and Clemson have a vastly easier path.
Notre Dame's is much harder than yours.
If Ohio State was winless.
Oh my
You're going
God.
To Columbus. That
little
game,
bro.
Listen, it's not little bro. That's understanding the history of this. You can go back and look at how many times both ways, Michigan doing it to OSU, OSU doing it to Michigan, that one team has been not that good, and the other team has been in title contention and lost that game. This is not – and I'm not going to get cliche, throw the records out the window when rivals meet. Listen, you can never, ever, ever count that game as a win until you win that game. especially on the road. That's just insane to me. No, you cannot say it's locked up. You have to worry about that game. How could you not be worried about that game? It's not every single year, no matter what. And this is these are the kind of years where it comes most. I believe it was the year that OSU won the title. I think it was that year. I could be misremembering. A few years ago, they went to the college football playoff and won the title.
2014.
That they came in to play a bad Michigan team at the Big House with Devin Gardner and I think Brady Hoke's last year, and Michigan had a disastrous year. Our offensive line was terrible. Michigan was a 2-point conversion away from winning that game. You think Ohio State fans were worried about that game? No way. They were vastly better than Michigan that year. They were the best team in the nation, and Michigan was garbage. And Michigan was a 2-point.
They were also rotating three quarterbacks. You can never.
That's the cuddliest thing I think you will ever
say.
You can never.
All right. The emergence of a running game. My biggest thing, you know, about my criticisms with Jim Harbaugh. The emergence of a running game is the biggest reason the revenge tour is on.
No, I think the biggest reason is Shea Patterson. Cudley. Cudley, I think the biggest reason is Shea Patterson. That does kind of tie into the point, though, because he can throw it, but he can run it, too. So defenses now have two things to worry about instead of, you know, just throwing Wilton Spate or O'Korn back there or, you know, any kind of other garbage quarterback. Besides, obviously, the defense, but their defense has always been good.
Grizzly, but it's not 100% the running game. The running game is a product of the fact that our offensive line is way better than it's been any other time under Harbaugh. That is all the difference on this team, and that has been all the struggles under him. That is the biggest thing. Even if Shea doesn't come, if he doesn't get hurt, McCaffrey would have been fine. I'm not saying that he should have been starting or that he's better than Shea, but we would have been fine. That offensive line is the biggest reason this team is actually taking the next step. Grizzly.
Michigan will be favored against Ohio State by 10.
Cudley. Ohio State's going to win this week, so is Michigan. Michigan will probably be 6.5-point favorite.
I have the exact same answer. Cudley, it's going to be between 4 and I think 4.5-6, like somewhere around in there. It doesn't matter what happens. Games in Columbus, Ohio State's going to be ranked in the top 10. It's still going to be a close spread.
Alrighty. Moving on to the Shield, the NFL. That's not in Mexico this week. We got ourselves 5 here. My first one, Le'Veon, just talking about our discussion, this is a little different spin here. Le'Veon Bell's holdout has saved the Pittsburgh Steelers this season.
No, I'll say Cudley, I don't think Le'Veon Bell wouldn't have done anything that James Conner is already doing.
Grizzliest thing you've ever said, because it saved them a metric ton of cap space, not just for this season, but going forward, that they're not locked into that, and that they have his replacement that proved himself. It's huge for the Steelers. The Steelers, everyone talks about whether Le'Veon Bell's going to win or lose this. The Steelers are the biggest winners of all.
The question was for this season,
though. All right. On to the next one. No Super Bowl will have a combined point total. Think about this. A combined point total of less than 45 points ever again.
No, I'll say Cudley. There's going to be a game where a team scores 10 points and another team is at, you know, 24 or something like that. So I'll say Cudley.
You're talking about eternity. It has to be Cudley. Like, we're talking about, I mean, give it, even if you said 20 years, no, there's going to be a low-scoring Super Bowl. There might be multiple low-scoring Super Bowls. I get your overarching point, though. Scoring is way up, and I hate it.
The New Orleans Saints have the best offense the NFL has seen since the greatest show on turf in St. Louis in 2000.
I'll say that's Cudley. My favorite offense, and still I think the best offense ever, was the Patriots, Tom Brady, Randy Moss offense.
Cudley as hell. They don't even have the best offense in the league this season. I will take the Chiefs offense all day.
Okay. The Los Angeles Chargers will move back to San Diego within 3 seasons.
Cudley. I think there's going to be, I think they're going to start winning, them and the Rams, and I think they're going to get a lot of fanfare in L.A. moving forward. Also, I don't know what the deal is with their stadium, but I couldn't
see them sharing, but the Rams are the owners.
But I can really see them going kind of backpedaling with that.
Cuddly, but only because San Diego's not going to take them back. This is so dumb. True. You have two great teams in L.A., and I mean like really good teams, two of the better teams in the NFL,
and yet
and
one
their home games are like not even home
Northwestern.
Games.
Northwestern.
you can see, yeah, like Northwestern, even if Northwestern is good, right? So, yeah, you can say that they might start winning consistently and some teams. It's stupid. You don't need a team in LA. We've proven this over and over again. Now you have two teams in LA. Chargers are probably going to end up somewhere. I don't think it's going to be San Diego. I think San Diego is going to give them a middle finger like they did before.
All right, and my strongest one, and this is not, I promise, recency bias from this past week, but Tennessee are a live AFC contender.
I'll say that's cuddly. I still don't think they're even the best team in their own division, and they caught a Patriots team that, while they are still the Patriots, they're definitely not the Patriots of old. They don't have all the same weapons. Gronkowski is basically dead.
Cuddly, I don't believe in Tennessee at all. Mariota hasn't progressed as he should. He's playing a little bit better as of late. The offensive line's been a disappointment. They have some injuries. Derrick Henry's starting to run like an offensive lineman. Not feeling it.
And now on to the most mediocre of all of the divisions in football, the NFC North.
AFC South says what?
The NFC, well, the NFC South are actually solid.
AFC.
So, AFC.
Oh, my bad. And, you know, I still think AFC South top to bottom is better than the North.
Hold on. No, I'm interrupting your takes. You're a huge believer in the Bears. Minnesota is coming on and starting to look like the team they should have been as they get healthy. Those are two, like, NFC contenders right there. Like, how can you say it's a bad division? That your worst teams have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback and I don't want to talk about the Lions.
All right. On to we the North. The NFC North. The awful Norsemen, which I will get to in a minute, but my first take, my beloved Chicago Bears are the most complete team in the North this season.
Cuddly, I mean, it's still the Vikings. They've proven themselves. They still have a much better quarterback than the Bears.
That defense played very well, though, my friend.
You said overall, so I'll still take the Vikings overall to get it together.
Cuddlier than a kitten. That is the worst way you could have tried to phrase that the Bears are the best team in the NFC North.
No, I never said best. I don't agree with that.
Because it was bad. The Bears have an amazing front seven, probably the best in the NFL. They have a secondary that I still don't believe in. They have an offensive line that is sketch. They have a quarterback that I absolutely don't believe in, and their receivers are above average, but no, they certainly have plenty of holes and vulnerabilities. Whereas Minnesota, when healthy, are you kidding me? I'll take their whole team. Like, please.
Mitch Trubisky will not receive a long-term contract extension from the Bears.
I'll say that's cuddly. He'll play well enough. You'll look at the numbers, and the Bears will be well enough in contention. He's going to get on a better rapport with Matt Nagy, the coach. They'll offer him big money.
For the Bears' sake, I would like to say Grizzly. For the Lions' sake, I would like to say Cuddly. If they offer him a long-term contract, they're going to be the Jacksonville Jaguars this year. They need to find his replacement to take the next step.
The Vikings are the worst contending team in the NFL.
When I think of worst contenders, I think of teams that are actually least likely to make the Super Bowl. So I'm going to say cuddly take and offer my own hot take in that I think the Patriots are the team least likely to make the Super Bowl that everybody thinks is going to make it.
I'm going to say cuddly. I have no problem with his Patriots take. You can never rule out Belichick and Brady, but they have serious, serious flaws that I think by the end of the season they'll fix most of them, but, I mean, they have issues. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are another one that their defense is just too bad. I love the Chiefs. You know, I just said they have the best offense in the NFL. Their defense is just too bad.
Yeah, but the Vikings with their injuries.
The Vikings are getting better. They're getting healthier. I think the Vikings are right up there.
You can't get better towards the end of the season, guys.
Oh, Mike, stop! Philadelphia sucks!
Continue.
Okay. This is one that's going to hurt. I only made sure that there was one Detroit one. The Detroit. Ugh, so bad they may as well be playing on 8 Mile Lions. Must embrace the process, but retain Patricia.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say Grizzly for now. I think they should pretty much bottom out. Getting rid of Patricia now isn't the answer. But if you're talking about just getting, or, you know, keeping them for eternity, again, obviously not. But keeping it in the short term, I'll say that's Grizzly.
Grizzly, but never going to happen because the biggest thing this team needs to do is get rid of Bob Quinn, and as soon as Bob Quinn's gone, Matt Patricia is gone.
Hey, I notice how he didn't say Stafford because he knows he's wrong now, but he won't fess up to it.
Not at all.
Oh,
not even
my God.
In the slightest.
Okay, now my strongest one. This is one I'm pretty proud of, actually. Green Bay are the Notre Dame Fighting Irish of the NFL and will only suffer unless they modernize.
I'll go ahead and say Grizzly, but I think that's across the board for any team. Maybe not necessarily the Notre Dame comparison, but you have to be able to score more than Green Bay can score to keep up with today's NFL and the NFL of the future.
I want clarification on modernize.
So I guess I'll expand a little bit because this is the last take. So I see a lot of parallels between Green Bay and Notre Dame. A lot of great history. There's always that potential.
You know, I got that part. I'm talking about like the modernizing. Like, what
well,
are they
no, but
say?
The modernizing part is part of the Notre Dame comparison, where Green Bay thinks, oh well, we have a star quarterback. People will flock to him. People will flock to Green Bay and Lambeau Field and all that crap, and we'll just succeed on our laurels rather than actually try to, for in Notre Dame's case, join a conference. But in Green Bay's case, actually, like, embrace a proper team-building dynamic.
I'm going to say cuddly because I just completely disagree on what Green Bay's issues are. They've never been big free agent spenders anyways. They've never tried to be. I actually think the way that Green Bay has tried to build their team is quite intelligent. They've made a few misplays over the years. But the biggest issue I think Green Bay has had is, putting way too much on Aaron Rodgers. Perfect example is earlier this year when they played the Lions and they decided that Aaron Rodgers was just going to throw the ball every down instead of gashing the Lions, who couldn't stop the run, and they have a really good running back in Aaron Jones, and they found themselves quickly in a 24-0 hole because of some bad luck. They just need a real coaching staff, and they need some more depth. I think they've done a lot of things right. They pass the ball a lot. They have a really good quarterback. A little overrated, but a really good quarterback. They beef up the offensive line so that they can run their offense regardless of who their skill players are. They just need a real coaching staff and maybe a few splurges. But I don't think they're like they run their team like it's 1950s. I don't think that's the issue at all.
And that is going to end our first Grizzly Takes. It was really grizzly to hear Paul talk for way too long about Michigan, but hopefully we'll be fresher. We'll be getting that salmon in the creek, and this segment will be rowing on in weeks to come.
Before we start the picks, we're going to recap last week real quick. Myself and Ryan, very, very average week. Swung and missed big on a couple games, but we finished at the 4 wins, 5 losses in 1 push. Both of us did. And weird week, real weird week. But Dylan finished right behind us at 3-6-1, which
shit.
Looks a lot worse
Boo.
Than 4-5-1, even though it's just a game back. But Dylan has the incredible feat of going winless across 6 college football games, which is supposed to be Dylan's forte.
His
he
expertise.
Went 0-5-1. That is absolutely awful. But he at least kind of made it respectable with a solid showing in the NFL picks. We are going to get right into them. We're going to start with college like we always do. First game of the week, diving into the local teams right away. We talked a lot about Michigan already. Indiana visiting Michigan. Michigan 28-point favorite at home on Senior Day.
Yeah, so with this game, it is tough. Indiana does play Michigan pretty tough usually, but their offense isn't as electrifying as it usually is, and they've already given up some pretty big point totals, 35 to MSU, 49 to OSU, 42 to Iowa. Michigan is at home on Senior Day. I don't think they're going to get caught looking to head to Ohio State. I'm going to take Michigan to cover.
They were almost there on covering the spread last week against a much worse Rutgers team, but I actually don't think that the looking ahead angle is going to be a thing for this team. They're dialed in. They're ready. This is their year. I will take Michigan to cover this.
I don't think Michigan's going to look ahead at all, but I do not think they're going to cover the 28 points. You guys talked a little bit about Indiana playing this team tough. They don't have the same offense they've had in the past, but they do have a good quarterback, good running back, decent offense. I think Michigan's defense is the best in the land. This is senior day. I think you're going to see a lot of seniors that you've never even heard their names before. Michigan is trying to get through this game healthy just to get to Ohio State. I think it's going to be like a 20-point win. They do not cover. Next game is going to be Dylan's upset pick of the week in what I guess he's going to say is a straight-up win. Syracuse
spoilers.
Traveling to South Bend. Notre Dame, a 10-point favorite at home against the ranked Orange.
So I would take I'll actually take Syracuse to cover. I don't know the status of Notre Dame's quarterback yet, but Syracuse also doesn't have a very good defense. Notre Dame is playing for their playoff lives. They know if they lose, then they're not going to go in. But being at the game was at Yankee Stadium, I do think Correct. Syracuse will cover, but I do expect Notre Dame to win.
All righty, so I'm going to give a slight angle here. So there is a Yahoo article right now. Did you know that the GOP isn't getting mad at Notre Dame Catholic school, but their students knelt during the national anthem? We got ourselves an anthem controversy in the Babers Bowl, but I love Syracuse, number 12 in the nation, the fighting Dino Babers. They are going to be chanting, reeling, and screaming in NYC for an upset over ND.
Notre Dame is going to make a statement by this game. They're going to win by 17, 20 points. They beat a better team on the road in Northwestern by double digits last week, and they are going to roll on the way to an undefeated playoff trip. Now we have the game that I wish we didn't have to pick, but we have to pick it because no one shut up about the group of five. College Game Day is visiting Central Florida, the worst state in the union, and the most overrated team in the union.
Yeah, hey, they have to do recounts all the time.
Just ridiculous. Honestly, I hate Florida. UCF, 7.5-point favorite at home against one of the few ranked group of five teams in Cincinnati.
I'm going to go ahead and take UCF to cover. I do love Cincinnati. It's where Mark D'Antonio was before he came to Michigan State. But I don't see UCF really having a let up. They want their back-to-back national championship rings or banners or whatever they do for going undefeated. So I'm going to take UCF.
College Game Day is going to be there, and I don't understand why they're there, because UCF hates ESPN and the College Football Playoff Committee because they keep getting slighted. They're going to put it on Cincinnati. It won't matter because they're still only going to be like number 11 or 12, but UCF will win by at least three scores.
There are only four ranked group of five teams, and the three that are not UCF are literally the last three teams in the ranking. And those are token rankings. They do not even count. UCF rolls. In a game that will actually be good, Iowa State travels to Texas.
Sounds good. Hook 'em.
So I'm going to go ahead and take Texas in this game. It is a home night game for Texas, which I think does bode well in their favor. They might have some distractions from Tom Herman on the outside, but if they win, the spread's only three, so it's not like they got to cover a huge amount. I'm gonna go hook 'em Longhorns
in the now glorious come at me bro words of Tom Herman. Sounds good. Hook 'em.
If the College Football Playoff rankings are to be believed, this should be the game of the week, with 15 University of Texas hosting 16 Iowa State. This is going to be the one game that Texas actually shows up in a big game and doesn't disappoint. They win by 7. The last local team, MSU, traveling to Nebraska. And this game, we talked about upsets in Dillon. This is a game that Dillon has had MSU losing for a year. I'm not even joking. He said they were going to Nebraska and losing like a literal year ago before we saw how the season was going to play out.
I'm looking right.
2-point favorites, MSU on the road.
So all MSU has to do is win by a field goal. I don't really think it matters who they run at quarterback, whether it's the first series, second series. It seems like they're going to flip-flop them like we do every week. I'm going to go ahead and take Michigan State to cover.
As Paul had alluded to, before I even had all the stats that I have now,
Even in your show notes here, you wrote next to the spread in big words in the notes section for this game, lol. I'm going to be lolling like a nihilist because this is just proof of the futility of Mark D'Antonio in his twilight years like an old man, not learning his lessons and just wanting to sit there and watch Fox News. We are going to lose to Scott Frost. They're going to be all amped for this game. We're going to get our asses beat. We're not going to win in Lincoln again. I hate this team. I hate it. And I called it, and Michigan State's losing outright.
I'm trying not to audibly laugh because my laugh is just not something anybody wants to listen to. And I so much hate how this season turned out because I have to agree with Dylan. This is stupid because Nebraska looked so bad for 5 weeks, 6 weeks. Like, just no, 5 weeks they looked really, really bad. I think they started 0-6, but they looked really bad for 5 weeks. And we were all making fun of Dylan. We're like, yeah, MSU's really going to go lose to Nebraska. MSU's going to go lose to Nebraska. Nebraska's been a lot better lately. Scott Frost actually has the people that are going to be part of this future team buying in. Their quarterback, Martinez, is playing pretty good. Not sure what's going on with MSU's quarterback situation. You either got a banged up Lewerke or a Lombardi who's not very good. And this is a big game for Nebraska. Like, it sounds crazy, but this is actually a big game, and they're going to win it. And I hate it because it means Dylan was right about the stupidest thing ever, but Nebraska's actually going to win this game. I'm obviously taking Nebraska. We are switching it over, switching gears to the NFL, and we will start with a team that I wish we never had to pick. Now I would like to amend something. So this is Carolina at Detroit. Carolina's 4-point favorite on the road. Detroit's trying to defend the den. Not that there's much of a den left. But last week, me and Ryan both took Detroit. And as we all know, we're big Detroit fans, and Ryan is a big Bears fan.
Ryan, huh?
Dylan.
Don't you Ryan, slander whatever. Me.
Dylan is a Bears fan. I'm sorry. Yes, I apologize, Ryan. Dylan is a big Bears fan.
Bear down,
and
bitches.
Under no scenario would I ever not pick Detroit against his Bears. And it did not help that two of our best players were out.
They almost had that backdoor
cover.
Damn,
does this team suck.
Oh, you did give us a spread already. I'm sorry. I thought you were still going in your soliloquy. So another game that we both picked wrong last week was Carolina at Pittsburgh. Carolina got absolutely destroyed by the Steelers.
Oh, hey, who called that too?
I think Carolina's pretty pissed, and you're also still last in the picks. But Carolina's pissed about their showing last week. The Lions are wounded. Like Mufasa when Scar was pushing them off the mountain. So I'm going to go ahead and take Carolina big in this one.
New show rule. If you go winless in a segment, you are not allowed to talk trash about picks for 2 weeks.
Hey, I wasn't winless in NFL, so first off.
Winless in college.
Carolina's on almost a 10-day resting period. Carolina is going to run all up and down Detroit. If anybody remembers what the Carolina game was like last time they visited, I think it'll be much of the same. Carolina by 2 scores.
I'm going to pick Detroit because I don't want to imagine a world in this city where they lose 4 straight games and still have their awful GM intact and everybody is calling for their head coach that just took over the job. First year on the job and everybody's going to be running this dude out of town. I'm sick of hearing the Patricia garbage. I'm sick of hearing the Stafford garbage. I'm sick of it all. Just win a game. Just win a game or at least be competitive. I mean, these dudes are getting blown out. I think this team, this is it. I mean, if they're not going to show pride this week at home with whatever's left of their season on the line,
Lion Pride,
they never, ever will. I'm going to pick them to cover, and it might be the last time I ever pick them in my life. In a game that is actually going to be a good game, in a game that actually matters in the context of the NFL, the Houston Texans and Dylan's favorite quarterback, Deshaun Watson, go
look who was
to
right
Washington,
there.
Our nation's capital, to play the Redskins. 3-point favorites on the road, Deshaun Watson and the Texans.
I'm going to go ahead and take Washington. I do believe in the Texans a lot, but 3-point favorite on the road. On the road's hard to win anyway. And I don't think if the Texans do win, they're going to win by more than a field goal. So give me hail to the Redskins.
Redskins looked really good against a team where their coach, literally the Tampa Bay's coach, Dirk Cutter, admitted when he was making play calls against Washington, he didn't know why he was making those calls.
But Houston does, and Houston will absolutely cover under one of the up-and-rising quarterbacks, my man's number 10, Deshaun Watson.
Little-known fact, these are actually Dylan's two favorite quarterbacks playing in this game. Washington, especially their defense, is better than people realize. They had a blip against Atlanta, who any team can. But Washington, especially with the addition of HaHa Clinton Dix, they play a good brand of defense. I think Deshaun Watson is going to struggle with that because I think he is overrated. And Washington is a better team than people realize, and they will win this game straight up. I picked against them last week. New Orleans hosting Philly in what, before this season, looked like it was going to be an awesome game. Philly looks like they might have lost their way a little bit, evidenced by the fact that New Orleans 8-point favorite at home against Carson Wentz, who is playing quite well despite the record.
The 8 points is a lot for me, and I've been on a Madden roll recently with Philly, so I'm going to go ahead and take the Eagles.
That was like the equivalent of, I have Carson Wentz on my fantasy. Nobody cares about your Madden game, bro.
I don't have Carson Wentz on my fantasy.
Oh, my God. That was anyways, Camden. New Orleans, the problem is that Philly, they lost at home at night, by the way, to Dallas. That is such a demoralizing game to lose. This team just doesn't look right. I'll take New Orleans.
New Orleans cannot steamroll everybody this season. This is Philly's season. Philly, still, it's a bit of a long shot, but they're still in the race. This, if they don't win this game, they're done. I don't know if they will win this game, but I don't think they're going to fall by more than 8 points. New Orleans has been on an absolute tear that cannot continue every week with big win after big win. I think Philly certainly covers in this game. In our next game, we have the battle for the NFC North. Whoever wins this game is winning the NFC North. And I know that it seems early to say that, but whoever wins this game is winning the NFC North. Chicago is a 3-point favorite at home against Minnesota. We had a big talk about this in the Grizzly Bear segment.
I thought there was more to it. I'm going to go ahead.
Oh, he stopped on a dime.
You're breaking ankles like Stephon Diggs. So, speaking of Stephon Diggs, I'm going to go ahead and take the Vikings. I think this is the week where they really assert their dominance as the best team in the NFC North, and you're actually going to give me 3 points to go ahead and take Minnesota. I think it's a no-brainer. I'm going to take the Vikings.
I question Minnesota's health. I also question Kirk Cousins on the road. This is going to be a night game in Chicago. There's going to be some elements. It's going to be cold. My concern really is how the Bears keep utterly wasting Jordan Howard. This will hopefully be the one game where we actually see him get more than 20 yards in a game. Give me Jordan Howard to get some scores and give me the points for Chicago.
The Bears have 6 wins. Those wins come against teams that are averaging 3 wins on the season. They haven't really beaten anybody of substance. They've looked bad in some games that they've played. They lost to Brock Osweiler and the Fighting Dolphins. They're not there yet. They're just absolutely not on Minnesota's level. Minnesota's defense is getting healthier and looking more like Minnesota's defense. Minnesota wins this game going away. Game of the week from not Mexico City, because Mexicans would rather watch the other football and didn't care enough to get the football field ready, so they had to relocate the game, and instead of being an international showcase, the LA Rams are now playing at home. Not that it makes a difference, because no home fans go to Rams games. KC, this is a battle of the two best offenses in the NFL that are not the New Orleans Saints before Dylan loses his mind. We just saw a massive game the Rams were in with the Saints. Now we get another one with KC. And I love that finally these primetime games are having massive games with, and these are two teams that many expect to play each other again in the Super Bowl. Rams at home favored by 2.5 got a little bump after the announcement that game was moved to LA.
So with the Rams favored by 2.5, let's start it over. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Rams. This is obviously the toughest game of the week to pick, but the Rams have been my Super Bowl pick since preseason, so I'm going to roll with them. I hate to pick against Patty Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt, all of them. But like I said, the Rams are my second team besides the Lions, so I'll take the Rams to cover.
This game has so many parallels to the same Thursday night game, which, by the way, by far has been the best game of the year, which was the Vikings playing at the Rams. It's going to be an absolute shootout. However, I think that Sean McVay is far too crafty for this Kansas City defense to even get a sniff of a stop. I think that the Rams will at least score on every single drive that they have the ball. They are going to win and score over 40 points.
I hope you realize how bold that is. Every drive, every single drive, that doesn't happen a lot. Kansas City defense sucks. 100%. I think the Rams are the better team in this game. If the Rams had a real home field advantage, I would be picking the Rams. But they don't. And I think this game is actually a toss-up. And because it's a toss-up, I'm going to take KC with the points. I don't know who's going to win this game. I think it is literally 50-50, so I'm going to take the points. I think you're going to see a huge offensive game. I wouldn't be surprised if the Rams score 42, and I wouldn't be surprised if KC scores 45. I think this is going to be an awesome game to watch, awesome way to cap the week, but I think KC does cover.
I do want to just point out that you have complained about the NFL having too much scoring, and then you said a 45-42 game is going
to
be really awesome.
I am talking to the people right now. And I know this is what the people want. I would rather see a 17-13 game any day of the week.
Gross.
But I know that I am in the minority. And I know that if we have a back and forth 45-42 game, all of Twitter is going to be ablaze with the greatest NFL game that they've ever seen.
Y'all made fun of me for not liking the Super Bowl because it was too high scoring. You hypocrites.
Oh, but no, I love the high scoring.
I fully admit, I like the low scoring games. But
nope.
I'm a man of the people.
I watch too many low-scoring teams to like low-scoring games.
And those are our picks for the week. That is all 10. We actually split it even this week. 5 college, 5 NFL. I tried to put some balance in the mix, so we're not picking all college games, so that Dylan could actually win some games. That's all, folks.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes.
Bear down, and the defighting Dino Babers will live on.
Deuces.
Thank you all for joining us this week. We will see you next on this edition of Sports Carnage. Good night.